Well, folks, welcome to one more edition of Politics and Random. Alberto is your host. Thank you so kind for being a part of the show. Welcome, everybody. We're kind of scarce. We started kind of slow today. Eric Hayes is in the house. Good morning, Eric, or good afternoon, Eric Hayes. We also have Michael Rudnan in the house. We also have Yvette Avery Herod, La Preciosa de Atlanta, Georgia. Michael from Brooklyn, New York. Paul Fleming from Atlanta, Georgia. It's Eric Hayes from Atascocita, Kingwood. How are my peeps doing today? I trust everybody is doing just fine. Today we are going to talk about some very special issues. Let's see what is somebody started writing. Eric says Colombia support pulled via Kraft Super Bowl billionaire. Kraft and Rich message. What if more affluent people do the same? They have a $13 billion fund. That is Colombia does. Okay, BP is here. Bruce Pollard is in the house. How are you doing, my brother, Bruce? I trust that all is well with you. Eric Hayes says, it is ironic how we lock up items on the shelf, but not the criminals that steal them. That is something you placed on my blog this morning because it rang a bell with me. And that Tesla is laying off 2,700 tells me a lot. They didn't do their homework. Again, poor management. What can I say? Poor management. Anyway, again, I guess if you're worried about Twitter and talking a lot of nonsense, you don't do the right things to make sure that you keep your infrastructure for this new product that you have, which is what Tesla is so bothered with so many other things. They don't concentrate. He hasn't concentrated on the things that he needed to do. Like, let me go ahead and get support from other businesses so that we can have electric chargers all over the place. Instead of trying to think about Twitter and Twitter and Twitter, invest those billions of dollars in stations, electrical stations to keep your cars powered. But no, again, like I said, there's nothing smart about Elon Musk. I know a lot of people like to say, oh, Elon Musk is so smart. Elon Musk isn't all that smart. Elon Musk had a silver spoon in his mouth. And not only did he have a silver spoon in his mouth, he also had support from the government. Not only did he have that, but he had support for the engineers and he had support from what we developed at NASA. Because remember, all that technology that's being used at Tesla is not like, oh, they came up with such great innovations. Yes, they did some, but let's be clear now. Let's be clear now. It has less to do with Elon Musk's intellectual acuity than the engineers that worked on these companies that he bought, purchased, or undercut. So let's be clear on that. Anybody wants to discuss that, we can at any time. But anyhow, let's continue the show. I'm going to start the show with the interview that I did today with Mark Thompson, who spent some time on campus at the Columbia University. He has a very important take that I think we need to jump into. And as we do that, I trust that more people will come in right now. Let's see. Oh, Twitter has quite a few on it. Let's see. But let's go ahead and get busy. And we'll start that at this very moment. The Reverend Mark A. Thompson spent half of his life as a journalist and political activist in the Washington, D.C. area before relocating to New York City in 2010. He's a civil rights leader, political organizer, and an analyst, a radio and TV commentator, and the host of Make It Plain with Reverend Mark Thompson. He recently spent some time with the protesters at Columbia University. Good morning, Mark. How are you doing today?
Good morning, man. I'm fine. How are you? Glad to be on board with you again.
Absolutely. Great to see you. I saw you yesterday. I think you were on the campus of Columbia University. Tell me, what was the environment like when you got there?
Well, first of all, I went there Sunday, and the environment betrays the current media narrative and the narrative of some who, frankly, are just against the protest movement. It was very peaceful. First of all, the campus is pretty much locked down. You can't get on there. I was able to get on there as clergy because, as some may not be aware, Columbia has other affiliated schools. Barnard College for Women. Actually, wanted my daughter to go to Barnard. She went to Morgan State, which is fine. Morgan State is great, and she's okay. And then Union Theological Seminary is also affiliated. So the students at Union wanted to have a Sunday worship service there. And I went there to participate in that. And it was a beautiful service. It was peaceful. It was calm. And frankly, my brother, I started to feel my age. There were people up there younger than my kids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, these are babies. They're not hurting anybody. These are literally children. And of course, it reminded me of my student protest history. Going back to when I was 18, we got Georgetown to divest from South Africa. But it was just a beautiful and peaceful experience.
Yeah, we did the same thing at the University of Texas in the 80s. We were trying to get the university to divest from South Africa. Now, I am glad that you started that way and that the narrative that's placed on TV is not really the same. They make it seem like the campuses are a war zone and that one of our Jewish brothers and sisters just can't walk across campus. Is that really the case, or is that more of a propaganda thing to try to gain back the narrative of what we're seeing occurring in what Netanyahu is doing in Gaza?
Well, what I saw at that moment was completely calm. But I am aware there are some isolated instances of anti-Semitic harassment. Anti-Semitism exists against
It's
Jewish people.
real, yeah.
It's real. But to generalize and say these students and this student movement is doing that is not accurate at all. That's not an actual reflection of what's really going on. I have a colleague whose daughter was a student, a freshman at Barnard, and she ended up having to leave campus because of some of the nasty notes that were left under her door. So you're going to have we've always had provocateurs in the movement, but the general spirit of the students I saw Sunday, those who are at the encampment on campus at Columbia, was very peaceful and very nonviolent.
Now it's interesting because Ursa, what's her name? I saw her on the news with you, Ursa Hersey, who is Ilhan Omar's daughter. I think she was released. She got suspended from the school you were talking about, Barnard, right?
She got suspended. Now, we actually weren't on together. She was on with Mariam Alwan. I was on with Mariam, who's
Okay.
one of the leaders. Irsa was on with Mariam, and then Mariam and I were on together. Yes, and they
Okay, I
both,
see. They
yeah,
cut
right,
into it. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
yeah. No, they, right. They, no, they showed a clip. You're right. You're accurate. There was a clip with Mariam. I mean, with Irsa on there. Now, both of them have been suspended.
Right.
And
Is
here's
that
the thing.
justified?
No. As a matter of fact, they were arrested. Check this out. It's a little confusing, so folks, I'm gonna try to explain it. Follow along with me, just show you how ridiculous this is. They were arrested, Mariam and those at the encampment were arrested for trespassing. And because they were arrested for trespassing, they were suspended. Well, you can't trespass
Yes.
unless you're not supposed to be there, and you aren't trespassing unless you're already suspended. So they kind of got it backwards.
Right.
Should have suspended them, then arrested them for trespassing. I mean, if you want to follow the logic, there is no way
Right.
to it. But yeah, if I were an attorney, I'd be all over that. Wait a minute, how are you going to have him arrested for trespassing? Alberto, what president of any university in the history of universities and student protests, let me just ask your audience this question too, has ever survived calling the police on their own students?
I don't think any. I
Name
watched.
one who kept their job.
No,
One,
I don't think it ever happened. It never happened.
when people start doing that kind of stuff, I have to say, this is an intelligent woman, supposedly, London School of Economics, IMF, World Bank. That's her pedigree. That's where
Yes.
she's, which raises some other questions. That's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
She's been titled a baroness by the royal family. Okay, let's just look at that. So at a point, I'm getting wonder, and I said to people, as you get older, we look at things differently, Alberto. I'm wondering, well, maybe she's looking for some kind of severance settlement. Because you call the police on your own students, you're looking to get out of there, and you want them to pay you so you can just go into retirement. That's just me.
Yeah, let me just let the audience know. We're talking about Minusha Shafik, the current president of Columbia University, who called the cops on her own students for a protest that really was never violent.
Never was violent, and it was not trespassing. It's amazing. Who does not know about the history of student movements in this country? It did not reach the point of anarchy. And if people wanted to do their due diligence, they could draw a very clear distinction between the movement that is the encampment in Colombia versus any bad actors or provocateurs. And now this has only made it worse. Within 24 hours, NYU, MIT, Yale, University of Michigan, expect this to spread at HBCUs. Right now, as we speak, there are negotiations around Joe Biden's speaking at Morehouse commencement, and we think he may have invited himself, because that's what you can do that. When you're,
right.
You don't know that, when you're the president, you call and say, I'm coming to speak at commencement. It's not really, not always a request. You can just kind of do that.
Right.
And people give you that, you know, because nobody expects you to say no. But that's a problem. And it also shows how out of touch the well-paid consultant class is in terms of advising Joe Biden and the Biden campaign. Why would you put yourself in a position to be embarrassed to be asked not to come to Morehouse commencement? Why would you even put that out there? You don't even realize that there is a student movement that is growing. And if Joe Biden's not careful, he's going to hand this election over to the Bibi Netanyahu of America, Donald Trump.
Right. You know, it is interesting because it is concerning to me, the entire reaction around the country. We had where Asna Tavassum's speech was canceled. She's a valedictorian at USC. We have several instances now where it seemed, first of all, as you said, anti-Semitism is real. And likewise, there are provocateurs that are going into the movement as people go into every movement. My concern is whether there is an orchestrated effort to silence folks, what we're seeing now, a concerted effort to silence folks. We have on News TV today, Scott, I know you know who Scott Galloway is. Scott Galloway was attempting, a professor at NYU, was trying to equate, well, the 2500, first of all, we condemn Hamas. There's no doubt about it. We condemn Hamas. What Hamas did was a bad thing. We have these folks that came out and said now that, well, look, the United States after Pearl Harbor killed several hundred thousand people. So Israel's kill ratio is not all that bad anyway. How do we go ahead and sensibly make these types of comments on national TV?
Yeah, that was sickening to do that and to start, you know, using numbers or you know, you try to do math on which is a greater amount of killing. This is the issue. See, because, and again, if you're a journalist, you ask the right questions. So what are you saying? All these 30,000 some odd Palestinians are Hamas? Is that what you're saying? No, they aren't. And so to kill innocent civilians, I mean, there are the civilians that were killed in Japan. That was wrong. Any killing of civilians is wrong. So to justify past killings of civilians, to justify current killing of Palestinian mm-hmm. civilians because civilians were killed in the past, that's just absolutely wrong. And so we've got to continue to make the call that's been made for a ceasefire, for an end to this. And of course, we all decry Hamas. First of all, it's interesting that people want that to be the greater statement more than the defense of Palestinian civilians.
Mm-hmm.
Well, none of us, how many people do you know? How many people do I know? How many people does anybody listening now know who was ever a Hamas fan in the first place? You condemn stuff. Sometimes you condemn it at the proportion to which you were involved in it or condoned it in the first place. Who ever condoned Hamas? Nobody. So for us to be held to account, what about Hamas? What about Hamas? Well, it ought to be understood. The whole world is against Hamas. Nobody. I don't know any Hamas. I don't see any Hamas fan clubs on Instagram. I don't know anybody involved in that. So you doggone right. But that does not justify the covering up, or the minimalization, I should say, of the countless number of Palestinian civilians that have been killed. And so to try to say that there has to be an equivalent denunciation of Hamas, equivalent to the denunciation of Palestinian civilians, I mean, it's understood. And frankly, it begs another question. The notion that because of the color of my skin, or because I support the Palestinian people, or because I want a two-state solution, or because I support nonviolence and human rights and justice, to generalize and say, well, that also means you might support Hamas. Then what are we really doing there? What are you saying? That goes back to the trope that those of us who are people of color, those of us who, as Howard Thurman would call the disinherited, people of color, people who are disenfranchised, people who are dispossessed, people who stand for human rights and justice, are themselves inherently violent and terrorists. So, you know, it's a larger question. Let's just blanket everybody with the terrorist trope or the terrorist veneer.
Or even the anti-Semitism trope. And I, like I said, anti-Semitism exists. But I think what I see a movement that's emerging, they're attempting to make, they're emerging to stop you by making one believe just by disagreeing with or agreeing that there must be a ceasefire makes you an anti-Semite.
Oh, and it absolutely does not. And so I support these students. I'm probably going to join them some more. And just, you know, this reactionary. So, you know, last night NYU had faculty arrested.
I heard. Yeah.
Now I'm going to say something else too, y'all. Wait a minute. So we got to look at the whole picture. Is this really just about what's going on in Gaza and in Israel? So who benefits from this? When October 7th happened, of course we decried what Hamas did, but immediately, I can't help it, man. I'm just a political animal. First place I went was back to 1980, Alberto. And with Jimmy Carter.
Right. When what Reagan did as well, right?
Hello.
Thank you.
Right. And it cost Carter the election. So I'm looking at that. But now that this has escalated into the movement in the streets, now I'm thinking about 1968 and LBJ. And, you know, the well-paid consultant class gets paid billions, but I don't get paid. I'm saying this for free. There is an element in this, including those, because now there's a relationship. When we're talking about relationships, there is less of a relationship between these students and Hamas, far less of a relationship than there is a relationship between some of the people who are trying to project anti-Semitism and harsh tactics toward these students. Those individuals have more relationship with Christian right-wing Zionism and nationalism. And who do Christian right-wing Zionists and nationalists support? Donald Trump.
Right.
So you got to have something to mobilize that base. Right now, they can't mobilize the base. There's nothing going on. And they're on the ropes. So let's create a foil. Let's create something to mobilize the base so that we can get more of our voters out to vote for Trump, because otherwise they're not coming out like they want to. Trump can't even campaign. He's in trial. He's in court. So we got to campaign for him by creating this trope. That's what's going on. And there's a nexus, Trump, Putin, Netanyahu. And that's what we have to be concerned about as well.
And you know what's interesting? You wonder sometimes if some of the people on the inside with the president, the current president, doesn't really have his best interests at hand. After all, you know, we have become complicit. I mean, we just signed a big war bill, and we never said, well, these bombs that we're giving you cannot be used against people in Gaza. None of that kind of restrictions on it. But anyway, before we close, there are a lot of other tidbits that I'm seeing out there. Google just fired 28 people for having a sit-in to complain about a $1.2 billion contract. I mean, we see a lot of these tentacles going out in different areas that if you have any objections whatsoever with what Netanyahu is doing and you complain or you raise stakes about it, that you pay a price for it. It seems like that is the real movement that is growing right now. And it seems like these students are just a pawn.
That is the movement. And, you know, again, you look at the forces that are pushing that. What is their real agenda? This is a righteous movement. This is a lot like the Vietnam War. And that couldn't be stopped. And those who tried to stop it, LBJ, Nixon, others, paid a heavy political price. And so I don't quite get it. And it's look, we can't have Trump, But if this continues, if the reactionary and the counter-revolutionary forces continue to attack students and young people and people's rights to speak out against human rights, and if Gaza and the people of Palestine continue to get bombed mercilessly as civilians, I don't know how people vote. What are they going to do? What are people going to vote for? And we know Vietnam cost LBJ, and we got something worse in Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
This is history repeating itself. And it's tragic because it's almost as if the Biden administration or the White House or the DNC or the party, the campaign, is okay with that. And it's very, very scary. If Trump gets back in, it's going to be worse for the Palestinians. It's going to be worse for the world. Marriage equality will be gone. The revocation of Roe will be codified into law, a national abortion ban. These are things that we have to be, DEI is practically gone already, affirmative action, no more. We'll be living under the same autocracy that other countries, including Israel, are living under now. Can't have that. So this has got to be fixed. The anarchists are not the students. The anarchists are those who are prosecuting this war against innocent civilians and punishing those who are speaking out against it. Those are the anarchists.
We should be careful as well. You know, when you have a Jamie Dimon out there saying, hey, Trump may not be so bad after all, you know we have a problem.
Yeah.
We have a problem. Anyway, any closers for me, Mark?
No, just on a sad note, I'm thinking about going to the trial. And maybe watching some of that and listening to it. I'll let you know. I'm seeing.
I want you to send me when you get out there. You gotta be in touch with me and send me some of that info, man.
The only thing to get us off of this other thing. Can you imagine, Egberto, if they had cameras in this courtroom? It would be bigger than OJ.
Yes.
I mean, people would be calling in to work, like, you know, especially everybody watching this. I mean, this is salacious, dude. You paid to hush the story about a porn star.
Two.
I mean, you running for president. Who can do that? And he's in there falling asleep, and allegedly they say he's falling asleep and farting out loud.
Yes.
I mean, dude, this is wild. This is absolutely wild. I mean, we've never seen anything like this, man.
Look, Mark, thank you very much for your time. Folks, this is the Reverend Mark A. Thompson, the host of, I always get of your thing wrong. Make It Plain with Reverend Mark Thompson podcast.
You always get it right. I've never heard you say it wrong. You good, man.
Well, you know, I have to think about it. But anyway, thank you so kindly for having been on Politics Done Right, my friend. Peace.
Thank you, my brother. Love you, man.
Love you too, man.
We spend a lot of time deconstructing the news, trying to parse it into a form that everybody can understand. We try to find those little nitpicks where it flies above the fray, etc. If you really like these videos that we do, I want to ask a big favor. Please go ahead, number one, subscribe to our channel, and number two, please join if you can. Thank you so kindly for watching. Keep watching. Please remember to share. We must populate the entire internet with our progressive message, a message that we know is what most Americans say that they want. So help us, please, join.
Absolutely, you want to join. Absolutely, you want to. Anyway, folks, wow. A lot of stuff has happened since I started playing this, so I guess I better start. Welcome aboard, May Wood from Long Beach, California. Welcome aboard as well. Hey, Melissa Bowie is in the house from Houston, Texas. How you doing, Melissa? Great to see you here. And we also have Melanie Keelan from Barcelona, Spain in the house with us. How you doing, Melanie Keelan? Michael Rodden, I think I saluted you already. I'm scrolling down to find people before I then scroll back up and check your messages out. Who am I missing? If I missed you, forgive me. I think I got Paul Fleming from Atlanta, Georgia. Melanie says, great interview. Thank you, Melanie. Let's continue down. Okay, let me go ahead and get back to the top. Not to the top, to where I stopped reading the message the last time. Colombia is a blast from the Vietnam War. Maybe the sleeper has awakened. Yep. And I think we need to. The killing must stop. You know, I wanted to cut this from Galloway from Scott Galloway. Scott Galloway is a I like Scott Galloway. He's a NYU professor, and he's Jewish, and I understand his pain. And he said, "Well, you know, why is it only Israel in a war has to just come to a truce or have to just fight to a draw? Why can't we win?" That's what he effectively said, right? Why can we just win? And then he started to use examples. He said, look, after Pearl Harbor, 2,000 people died, but we killed 400,000 people with the nuclear bomb. Why isn't that considered bad? And then he gave some other examples. After 9-11, 3,000 people or so, however many died on 9-11, and we went ahead and annihilated over 200,000 people. And that's the kind of things that he came up with. First, two wrongs don't make a right. Number two, every time you see the literature that I write, the stuff that I write, I completely talk about how evil dropping that atomic bomb was. And likely if it were in Europe, it would have never been dropped. But it was a great experiment to do on our people in Japan, right? Quote unquote. Likewise, how many of us were objecting to Iraq because we understood what that meant? We understood that going into Iraq, what you were actually doing is fighting a false war, fighting a lie. We knew that, and we spoke up against that. So when Scott Galloway said that, I charted up to emotions and buying into that theory that somehow, and look, anti-Semitism exists, but anti-blackness exists, anti-black racism exists as well, right? And the pains are, I'm not trying to gradate pains, but we get it. But by all means, let's also tell the truth. What Israel under Netanyahu is doing to Gaza is in effect genocide. He said, why didn't we call what occurred in Japan genocide? Well, what occurred in Japan, in my opinion, was not genocide because they weren't trying to move people out of their land to go ahead and take it over. I mean, there's a whole lot of definitions as to what genocide means. They're not trying to destroy a culture, etc. I mean, you have to remember that what the right said specifically is they said the following. They said, we have to re-educate the Palestinians before we even talk about a two-state solution. What? That is like saying we have to re-educate Americans before we accept them and allow them to hold the land that they took over genocidally from the Native Americans. You see how silly that is? But anyhow, I'm moving on. All right, let's see what else we got here. Melissa Bowie says, why are we putting on as if we don't know what anti-Semitic is a front for? Let's see. I think that's what I was speaking to with Mark about. I think that's what you mean. But anyhow, let's continue. Michael says, despite fears of violence coming from that right-wing bubble, the protests are New York's colleges have been mostly peaceful. Meantime, Mayor Eric Adams is warning against outside agitators disrupting the protests. And that's true. That's we spoke about having provocateurs coming into these protests like they did in the Black Lives Matter protests, like they did in the gun protest. I forgot what that one was called. Way to Live protest or whatever from the young man from Florida. All right. Continue. In every case, pay thousands of indoctrination is not ideal for financial literacy. Parents beware. Students don't borrow. Don't know what you're talking about. Melissa Bowie said, if you study Judaism, then by default, you're considered Jewish, stating that majority of people who study the faith can be called a Jewish settler, but majority of the people behind the wall are not real Jews. Not sure exactly about the part that says once you study Judaism. I think, Bruce, you can answer that. You actually know quite a bit about the religion and much more. Let's see what else we got here. Paul Fleming says President Biden was joined by Senator Bernie Sanders at the White House to highlight the administration efforts to lower healthcare costs for Americans. The remarks came as Biden makes cracking down on corporate greed and relieving financial burdens for families a key pillar of the 2024 campaign. Now, that's what we need to do. I should read you something that I wrote on, and then I'm going to get to the other comments, but I want to read this because, you know, I get on to, I think it's called Sidewalk. Is it Sidewalk? Or what is that called? I thought it was called Sidewalk. It's that thing that everybody, Nextdoor, maybe Nextdoor. Let's see if it's Nextdoor. Yeah, it's called Nextdoor. All right. And I went on to Nextdoor. And, you know, because I get some messages every so often. And so I went on to Nextdoor and had a little statement that I think I want to read this one if I can find it in time before I have to just go on and say, ah, I can't find it. So let's see if I can actually find that stuff on Nextdoor, because I think it's important, folks. I think it is very important. There we go. Over the last few years, I have the... I want to find that. I want to find it. It's a, see if I can find it. See previous comments. Guys, bear with me. Bear with me. Bear with me. Bear with me. I promise. Well, I can't find it. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to put this on hold. I'm going to let you listen to Liz Cheney, and then I will be right back, because Liz Cheney said something present that we need to hear. Let's do that, and then I'll be back. Liz Cheney is on point. Remember, a few weeks ago, she said the Supreme Court, she would advise the Supreme Court to not delay. Of course, the Supreme Court delayed its action to determine if Donald Trump was immune. But now she wrote an op-ed. And in the op-ed, she, in no uncertain terms, pointed out. Look, all of us know what she pointed out. And all of us, you know what she said is true. But coming from her, being in the same bucket with these folks, it makes more sense for them to listen. Listen to what she had to say, and then we'll take it on the other side.
I think it's very important that the Supreme Court recognize that what he's doing is a delaying tactic, and that the American people, it cannot be the case that a president of the United States can attempt to overturn an election and seize power, and that our justice system is incapable of holding a trial, of holding him to account before the next election.
Former Congresswoman Liz Cheney last month sounding the alarm of the danger of the Supreme Court's delay in Donald Trump's election interference January 6th case. Today, in an op-ed in the New York Times ahead of Thursday's Supreme Court oral arguments over Trump's claims of absolute presidential immunity, Liz Cheney went even further, cautioning that a delay by the nation's highest court may mean that voters go to the ballot box with Trump once again on the ballot without ever hearing the significant evidence of his efforts to steal the 2020 election. She writes, quote, "The indictment and public reporting suggests that the special counsel was able to obtain key evidence our committee did not have. It appears that the grand jury received evidence from witnesses such as Mark Meadows, the former Trump chief of staff, and Dan Scavino, a former Trump aide, both of whom refused to testify in our investigation. Public reporting also suggests that members of Trump's Office of White House Counsel and other White House aides testified in full without any limitations based on executive privilege, as did Vice President Mike Pence and his counsel. Liz Cheney warning that if voters hear this evidence before November, they may never hear it at all." She goes on to say this, quote, "Trump knows what all of these witnesses have said under oath, and Trump understands the risks he faces at trial. That is why he is doing everything possible to try to delay his January 6th federal criminal trial until after the November election. If the trial is delayed past this fall and Trump wins re-election, he will surely fire the special counsel, order his Justice Department to drop all January 6 cases, and try to prevent key grand jury testimony from ever seeing the light of day." I like that now Liz is saying the quiet part out loud, but Charlie, that is the plan.
Yeah, that is the plan. Look, I think it is unconscionable that the Supreme Court has allowed these dilatory tactics to go on for so long. They could have ruled on this months and months ago. In a rational, reasonable world, the court will rule 9-0 very, very quickly that, of course, the President of the United States does not have absolute immunity, is not immune from prosecution. But the whole point here is, and Liz Cheney just lays it out so clearly, This is all about delay. This is all about making sure the voters do not have a chance to have this evidence aired in a court of law. And I really appreciate the clarity of her message and the fact that she is continuing to press this and put pressure on the court to the extent that anybody can put pressure on the court to say, we understand what the game is. It's not just whether or not how you rule on immunity, it's how quickly you rule on immunity.
Liz Cheney nails it. Like I said, she is in the same sect with these folks, with a lot of folks in the Supreme Court, etc. Maybe it'll have enough gravitas that the Supreme Court will give it a second thought. After all, they live on until they decide to quit the bench, but MAGA likely won't live on. MAGA is likely going to die out. And when MAGA dies out, those Republicans that held the ground on what they truly believe, as opposed to the MAGA nonsense, they are going to react. And when they react, it may not be what some of those Supreme Court judges think would be the reaction. But anyhow, as it turns out, Liz Cheney, kudos, as well as the two hosts who had some poignant things to say. Absolutely so, absolutely so. And thank you. As usual, the posse always come through. Michael Rodriguez, March of Our Lives. That's what I saw. They had some provocateurs in March of Our Lives. You constantly have these provocateurs trying to make these good movements look as if they're violent, etc. But we know the truth, and we'll keep doing what we got to do the truth. And by the way, in the house with us right now, Shakula, hairstylist. Shakula, help me out again. I forgot where you're located. Shakula hairstylist is in the house. I'm here too, just listening. My skin burns. I hope you're feeling better. I know you've been going through that for several weeks now, Shakula. I hope you are getting better. That's all I can tell you. Let's see. Michael has a long comment here about what young people are actually looking for. And let's see what else we got here. Donald, let's see. Michael said, That's not it. Anyway, what young people top political issue for stalling global warming and promoting long-lasting peace in Israel and Palestine? If Democrats continue messing with what the young people say they want, that might be at their peril. Not might be, that will be at their peril. Nobody wants to be stuck between two bad choices. Democrats who aren't doing enough to prevent Netanyahu's ongoing genocide, or Republicans who don't give a damn about brown people over there, the results of which would be a tenfold increase in the body count when Trump said Israel would get the war over fast. The worry goes straight to indiscriminate total war, which is exactly what his intent would be. We also have I saw another one that I wanted to read from Melissa Bowie, because Melissa is saying that I am Jewish. Fleming, I study Judaism. I am a descendant of the disciples. I can't hate myself. This has nothing to do with Jewish people. We love everyone. We just want Zionists to stop killing Palestinians. Melissa is a Jewish woman. So nice to know that, Melissa. And to some extent, we all share commonalities. Let's see what else we have here. All right. Here's what I wanted to tell you today. And this is what let me put this on the screen. And there's a reason I want it. There's this forum. It's not a political forum. It's called Next Door. All right. And Next Door, I post on Next Door every, do I have it in there? I need to, that's not the one that I want. Let's go ahead and put it in there. Come on, Egberto, get it in there. All right, I'm going to have to repost in a way. And let me tell you this, because this is what I would like you all to do. All right, there's this stuff called Next Door, okay? And it's just a community forum. And what they try to do is they try to keep it in your area, right? In other words, in your local community, your local vicinity, and you can expand how far out you want to go with Next Door. And this is where I tell you that we can make a difference. I wish our girl, Bridge MCP, was here so we could see this. But there's this thing called nextdoor.com, and you can communicate with people, and you can put a political message in there that answers a prescient
question that people are having, not just going out there and throwing politics, right? Let me give an example. There is this woman that came out and she says that she found that we got some laws changed in Texas. And there's a piece that I forgot to add in there. But we got some laws changed in Texas. And the laws in Texas were two of them that were present. One is that a lot of us got a rebate on taxes for our property taxes went down in Harris County. Actually, throughout Texas, property taxes went down. But there's always a penalty because if your property taxes go down, the state did it and it affects just about everybody, right? So somehow her land prices relative to her property went up. So she wrote a note on Nextdoor. That provided me with the perfect opportunity to give a message. And that message has to do with all these politicians, even when they give a little crumb to the average person, even when they give a little crumb to the average person, they usually take back a slice of bread. Michael, Nextdoor, I know you never heard of it, but it's something that people use in a lot of suburban areas. And this is why I say we can actually make a difference on the fringes, on the edges, we can make a difference. So I watched her comment about how upset she was with the valuation of her property and taxes and so forth. So I want you to see what I did. I created an answer that was apropos. I said the following. Our government reflects us because I live in a very red conservative area. So I wrote this. Our government reflects us. We allow them to use our fears and insecurities as they sell unsound policies. On our entire tax system, both local, state, and federally, is a fraud, and too many of us continue to vote for that. I hope at some time we stop being hoodwinked and start voting for people that really believe in an equitable tax system. Until then, our politicians will window dress, but ultimately in the aggregate, it is the middle class that gets taxed disproportionately. Let me give a classic example. We all own some of our own capital, a home, stocks, cars, etc. For most, whether poor or middle class, most of the assets we own or will ultimately own is our home, our boat, our car. Every year we pay a property tax on it. So our wealth get taxed yearly. But for those who own stocks and other financial instruments, as long as the gain is not realized, it grows tax-free. Guess what? You pay taxes on your home and similar capital assets, and when you sell that asset, you pay an additional tax of capital gains. Our overall tax rates could be orders of magnitude lower if we pay taxes on all our capital assets. It would mitigate the wealth disparity. In the United States, the top 1% of Americans own 54% of stocks, while the bottom 50% own 0.6% of stocks. The top 10% of income earners own 70% of the stock market, while the bottom 60% own only 7%. The stock market also makes up a smaller share of wealth for Black and Hispanic people for historical reasons. The above numbers illustrate a mathematical fact. Given that stock assets are treated differently than home assets, it means that our tax system is biased against the poor and the middle class. And guess what? The wealth disparity curves proves that it is working exactly as designed. So again, our government reflects us. We choose whether we want to be willfully ignorant or ones that some point begin voting in the interests of all. Did you really think the property tax cut was going to save the poor and middle class any money? Nope. It was yet another giveaway to the rich. They have bigger, more expensive houses, so now they get back more money on the home side in addition to the stock windfall. My brothers and sisters, let's get wise. And then I told them to come visit my stuff, because a lot of people don't get that. You know, they complain, and they want to blame Biden, and they want to blame this, and they want to blame that, not realizing. There's a piece that I forgot to put in there that I will. And in Texas, we also passed a constitutional amendment. Check this out. Texas understands that people are starting to get smarter. So that argument that I just made, if we are going to charge property taxes on your house, which is your form of capital, your stocks, we should also charge a tax on stocks. Think about it. Your home is capital. Stocks are capital. People can say, well, we don't know how much a stock is worth, and it goes up in price, up and down. Well, big deal. What is the stock worth on April 15th? That's the tax you pay. Because what our house is worth on that day is the tax we pay. Our house goes up and down in price as well, just like a stock does. But we have been indoctrinated into thinking that somehow owning stocks is different than owning a home, right? So here is the kicker. We have to re-educate people. We have to re-inform people and let them understand that no, your house is you owning stock, just like that person who decides to buy stock. And whenever they start talking about giving tax breaks, you think about it. When Texas gave a whole lot of money back with these tax cuts for property tax, it was yet another giveaway to the wealthy, because their homes are bigger, they own more land. All that kind of stuff just means, once again, we're emptying our coffers on the backs of the middle class. It's so consistent that all the policies that they put out there, it's for the wealthy folks, and it hurts people like you and me. And then there are people like you and me who actually went and voted in Texas to pass a constitutional amendment that says you cannot tax wealth. In other words, you can't tax stocks. You see how it works? And that is where we have to educate folks. That is where we have a lot of work to do. I'm not going to even answer to Eric's comment, because Eric doesn't get... Oh, my God. Well, I won't go there. What's the difference between taxing stocks and... Well, if taxing stocks makes no sense, taxing your home makes no sense. What's the difference between taxing... I tell you what, Eric, why don't you call in and tell me what is the difference between taxing stocks and taxing your home? I'd like to hear that. What makes it different? Please call me and let me know. Or anybody, give me a call. Let me know what's the difference in taxing stocks versus taxing your home every year for property tax. Please call and tell me. I want to hear it. Because again, it proves my point where I talk about us being indoctrinated and getting our thinking caps destroyed. Come on, anybody, call me right now. 281-823-7747. Anybody who thinks they can present a cogent argument as to why it is okay to tax your home and not tax your home. Wait a minute. Okay, let's go ahead. He gave an answer. Unrealized gains and losses and taxes for school is the point. Wrong. That is wrong. You have an unrealized gain in your home. And Bruce also says, get service for my property tax. And Bruce is calling. I'm glad we can talk about it. Hey, Bruce, go on. Talk to me, my brother. Oh, hold on a second. Yeah, I need to change the speaker.
This is me.
Yeah, I need to change the speaker because we got feedback. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so I think that the taxes that I pay on my property, based on the price of my property, are for services.
Okay. Now, the price that you would pay...
If the services weren't created, I couldn't I wouldn't have to pay, for example, the school tax.
Uh-huh.
Is to pay for the school. I know I pay for other people besides me.
Right.
But other people paid for me in the past. So that, you know, there's I was thinking about the, you know, the money I use to buy stock with. I've either already paid taxes on once.
Right.
Or I will have to pay taxes on them. If it's a 401k, I'll have to pay taxes on that money when I get back, plus the profit, plus tax on the profits, plus on the dividends.
Okay, so let's see if we can. Okay, I'm sorry.
You can't tax stuff twice, right?
All right, let's go.
Rule that you can't tax stuff twice.
Okay, good. I'm glad that you said that because right. I don't think there's a difference really. And let me explain. When you buy your home, right?
Yeah.
You buy your home with after-tax dollars. When you're paying your mortgage, you pay your mortgage with after-tax dollars. And plus, of course, you also pay interest with after-tax dollars. When you give a service from, you know, whether your asset is in my opinion, is your home or stocks, it is an asset, right? It is an actual asset that you have come to have in whatever state you're in, right? So, I mean.
And if I sell it, if I sell my home for more than I bought it, more than the first time, because there's a little thing there.
Right.
But if I routinely buy and sell homes every 2 or 3 years,
right,
I get a benefit. I have to pay tax on the benefit.
I am glad you said that.
I don't pay tax again on the house that I paid taxes to buy that already.
I am so glad you said that because that is where I show that the home is the same as a stock, right? Because that the home is in a worse investment than the stock, right? Because if you buy a stock and hold, that stock is going to appreciate with no taxes paid on that stock at all. But if you buy a home and that home appreciates, you continue
until,
to pay.
Until I sell it.
Oh, no. Let me finish. No. Not true. If your home, like my tax rates go up every year, my property tax rates go up every year based on the current value of my home. So if the current value of my home went up last year, I pay more taxes, more property taxes than the year before. And then if I sell my home, I make a profit from my basal salary, not even counting all the taxes that I paid before. You know, if we don't even have a cumulative added on the taxes and said you only have an appreciation if it's the value of the home plus all the taxes paid on the home. If there's a net, then you pay. You don't even get that. The way property taxes work is if you get the property, once you sell that property, if it appreciates, you pay an extra tax on that appreciation. Right, you pay capital gains.
But you haven't recognized my core statement that the taxes that I pay, my property taxes and school taxes that I pay year to year to year, they're for a service.
I agree.
They're not based upon the fact that I'm holding an asset. Based upon the service. And they just happen to be that way because there has to be some way to fairly distribute the taxes amongst everybody.
Right. I agree. But
House who lives next to me, house burns down, and his value, value of his tax goes to you know, just
zero.
What the property is. He shouldn't have to continue to, he shouldn't, well, property still has some value, but
right.
He shouldn't have to pay.
And he doesn't.
The taxes because he's not getting the same protection, the police protection, the fire protection.
Right.
If he has kids, he's not getting the schools. Those are all things that are services that are paid out of my year to year taxes. That's why they can charge that. Otherwise, if it wasn't very based as a that way, then they couldn't charge you that kind of tax.
No, but what I'm saying is
it would be taxing you twice. And in fact, if you take deductions, which very few people do in our class anymore, that house taxes is deductible because you can't have to pay Bruce, taxes twice.
I guess what I don't understand, what it's 401. I gotta, let me just, I'm gonna go over by another 30 seconds. Bruce, I tell you what, let's talk about this tomorrow because I think, I think
that's worth coffee, right?
Yeah. Actually, that's what we should do. That's what we should do. What's tomorrow? Tuesday? Yeah, you want to go out tomorrow morning?
Tomorrow is Wednesday.
Yes. Or you have something else to do?
I'm available.
All right. Let's see if we can meet. Let's see if we can. I got an interview tomorrow. Let's see what time in the morning is my interview. And after that interview, let's go have some coffee at the coffee shop we normally go to. All right?
Okay.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That was Bruce. Hey, guys, you see, you can disagree and have great conversations. Of course, I think I'm right, Bruce. I'm sorry. And I think if we're looking at it past each other, but we'll talk. Absolutely. Anyway, folks, I love you guys. Thank you guys for all being here. We'll go ahead and have this program tomorrow. My name is Egberto Willis. Oh, wait. I got to ask this. Please support the program. And how do you support the program? You support the program by going to politicsdoneright.com/support, politicsdoneright.com/support. And let me go ahead and give you, hey, Bruce, you are called the Almighty, man. politicsdoneright.com/support. And I'm putting that link in there. Please go ahead and become a paid subscriber of our newsletter. Alternatively, that is at politicsdoneright.com/newsletter. And by the way, you can go ahead and support our books by going to politicsdoneright.com/books. politicsdoneright.com/books. My name is Egberto Willis. This is Politics and Right. And you guys know how I end this, baby. I am what? Out.
We spend a lot of time deconstructing the news, trying to parse it into a form that everybody can understand. We try to find those little nitpicks where it flies above the fray, etc. If you really like these videos that we do, I want to ask a big favor. Please go ahead, number one, subscribe to our channel, and number two, please join if you can. Thank you so kindly for watching. Keep watching. Please remember to share. We must populate the entire internet with our progressive message, a message that we know is what most Americans say that they want. So help us, please join.